today on the podcast, I am talking to Scott Hayes and Chate Hayes, who are the co-hosts of the podcast, The Love Hayes, H-A-Z-E, as opposed to the way that they spell their last name. And this conversation was awesome. I mean, we just really connected. We have very similar approaches to psychology and healing and spirituality and all of that. So we really got into, you know, what it means to have tough conversations and how to have healthy relationships, overcome people pleasing and perfectionism. And we talk a little bit about what it was like for them navigating, you know, getting into mental health, being in the Black community and also in a Black church, and what their relationship with their spirituality has been like. And we covered a lot of ground. What can I say? Before I get into that, today's episode is brought to you by my one-on-one coaching. So if you are interested in living a life by your terms and not, you know, out of fear of what people are going to think or out of fear of change, but really taking responsibility for your life, taking responsibility for what you want, and having the going through the joyful process of actually defining what it is that you want and what lights you up in life and then going after it. That is what my coaching is for. I work with business coaching as well as life coaching. And of course, my business coaching involves life coaching because you cannot run a business without the mindset work and, you know, overcoming or working through a lot of that fear. But wherever you are in your journey, if you just feel like your life is not looking the way that you want it to, whether your career or your friends and family, or just the way that you're showing up for yourself, your habits, your hobbies, your self-talk, these are all things that we can work on, and these are going to be things that really break you open in terms of being more joyful on a regular basis, having the emotional capacity to deal with stress and navigate the challenges of life, and ultimately live in a way that you can look back in 10, 20, 30 years and be like, wow, I'm really proud of myself for taking that risk or putting myself in a position to make myself happy as opposed to holding myself back because other people told me to. That is exactly what this coaching is for. And I would love to support you in this journey. So in order to learn more, you can go to whitneycatalano.com/link in bio. That's whitneycatalano.com/link in bio. And my application is, I think, like the second or third link. So it's very easy. I would read off the URL directly from my application, but I have it on a different website. It's kind of long. Just go to whitneycatalano.com/link in bio or go to my Instagram and you will find an application for my one-on-one coaching. I have my pricing listed out, so there are no secrets. There's no, you know, hidden thing or, you know, weird sales call. It's just you and me talking, seeing if it's going to be a good fit. And my coaching is 6 months long and it will radically change your life and the way that you talk to yourself and show up for yourself and ultimately, you know, move through the world. This is the biggest thing that my clients tell me, is that they feel like a completely different person from who they were when they started coaching, but it didn't feel as scary as they thought it would be. And if that is something that you're worried about, that you're like, I don't know if this is going to work, or I don't know if I actually need this help, or I don't know, come talk to me, book a call, apply, and we can see if it's going to be a good fit for you. I will always be super honest because that's really important to me. It's one of my ethos, I guess, of my business. All right, let's get into it, shall we?
We get stuck working a 9-to-5. Just 'cause you're breathing don't mean you're alive. Do what you love, time is slipping away. And you could do anything, 'cause it's all made up anyway.
Welcome to It's All Made Up Anyway, the podcast where anything is possible, the rules are made up, and the points don't matter. I'm Wendy Catalano, a self-sabotage, accountability, business, and alignment coach for coaches, creatives, ADHDers, and multi-passionates. I'm here to help you heal your shit, master your habits, create a life that actually lights you up, and finally get out of your own way so you can bring your biggest goals to life without sacrificing the things that truly matter. Now, I didn't want to do this on the podcast because they both have a pretty extensive introduction, so I'm going to quickly introduce them and then we'll jump right in. Scott is a licensed clinical social worker with 20 years of experience as a mental health practitioner. He likes to educate minority populations around the importance of integrating systems to include regular mental health care as part of overall health and wellness, and he is regularly invited to different community health panels that he joins, and he also works with veterans around addiction and has this podcast, which he will explain a little bit more about how this podcast got started. Shate, on the other hand, his wife, a partner of 6 years, is a creative at the intersection of education and media production with a passion for producing programming that inspires personal and professional advancement, especially for marginalized communities. She leads a high-volume educational content production team at a market-leading ed tech company and is engaged in the community through career panels and contributions to Dance Point and Dance Teacher magazines. They both have really impressive backgrounds in terms of their education level and their interest in psychology, and I think what they're doing is amazing. I mean, they just get together on this podcast and like have those hard conversations that they're already have been having in private around their relationships. And so I think y'all are going to like them and learn a lot from them. And I will go ahead and just hop into the interview. Enjoy. So welcome to Shate and Scott. I appreciate y'all being here with me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your podcast and your mission with focusing on relationships. I know you focus on Black love and adulthood in general. I'm so curious how you got into this and started working together, spreading this message.
Okay. So just our background or the background for the podcast?
I guess either. I want to know how the podcast got started and how you got started with content and all of that stuff, but also your backgrounds are definitely relevant.
Okay. So for me, I started the Love Haze as just like an Instagram page as I was navigating through divorce. And it was just like this idea that love is kind of a haze and it can really beat you down. Right. And I just started being very open and honest about some of the things that I was experiencing. I think many of my friends had really viewed me as this guy that was in this perfect marriage. And I was struggling at the time with like being honest with the fact that the marriage wasn't perfect, that I wasn't perfect, that I had made some mistakes. And I had made in my mind that I really just wanted to create a space where I could be honest about that and be transparent. And so I was just post here and there, you know, little tidbits. I would hashtag them like, you know, tips from a therapist who's in therapy, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, after my divorce was finalized and Shate came along, she was like, you know, what is it that you want to see happen with this? And as we started to have the conversation, it was like, I want this to be, and I want somebody who is able to have the conversations that nobody had with me. And what I found was that a lot of my friends, even my parents, had gone through the idea of divorce. I had already divorced and everybody kept it a secret. Nobody was having the conversations. And I think by the time the ink was dry, people started like coming out and telling me that they were having these conversations, but they hid them from everyone. And so I really wanted to create a platform, and Shate and I then endeavored to create a platform where people could have these difficult conversations and know that they were not alone, that they weren't, you know, the only people who, you know, were feeling like failures at anything in life. It started with just relationships. And then we started to find like people were experiencing all types of things like money issues, dealing with mental health problems, and like keeping all of these things a secret and like portraying these perfect lives on social media and in front of their friends and family and really struggling, you know, in the background. And so that really kind of lined up with, you know, my background as a social worker and therapist, and kind of pushed me into like being a even better therapist, like getting into therapy on my own and deciding for myself that, you know, I wanted healing and wholeness, not only for myself, but for my whole community.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I have lots of things that I want to jump in on, but I'm so curious to hear Shate's background a little bit and your perspective on the start of this page.
My background is in, well, my first career was a professional dancer choreographer, hence the LA story that we were talking about before the show. And so I'm a creative, and I like to say that, you know, who I am and my values are about performance and people. Mm-hmm. So with that, I have a background in psychology. And then the performance piece has showed up in my arts career, dance career, and then now in the work that I do in terms of supporting folks to their next career goals, like transforming their lives career-wise. And so that comes with a lot of content development and programming. And so lots of workshops and events around how to move to the next, you know, point in your career through like in a corporate setting, work with like boot camp organizations to help learners like move to their next space. In terms of how that plays into the love haze, Scott and I, to me, these conversations are things that we were talking about together, like as we were dating and just in life in general. There are conversations we actually still have. We'll process together things that we've, revelations from therapy or things that we saw on TV. Like we watched this one dating show that we love called Ready to Love, and we will sit and unpack like why people are showing up the way that they're showing up and their representatives. And just like, so these are conversations that we were already having. And early on in our relationship, he would say like, oh, I think, you know, I've always kind of wanted to do, you know, insert the thing. And I was like, well, why aren't we doing it then? Like, what's stopping us? And so, you know, got a microphone, a camera and a website. And I was like, here, we're doing it. So that's right. Kind of,
yeah. It's interesting to me that both of you are doing this work around life transitions. You're doing it in careers, and you're both doing it in the love haze around. I mean, you got into it talking about divorce and really changing your life in that way. And I also work with people who, you know, leave one path for another, kind of trying to figure out what they really want. And there's so much fear I've found in actually leaving that thing that's not right for you. Yeah. I'm curious, Scott, what was your divorce like in terms of finally admitting to people that this wasn't as good as it looked on the outside?
That's a good question.
I think my upbringing played like a major role in it. Like I had this upbringing where it was like I was expected to be just a husband. Like I was expected to, you know, or taught rather to, you know, provide, pronounce, protect, all of those things. And you just kind of die to what it is that you need. And I kept finding myself at like this impasse, like I need this thing from my partner. And I think I had gone so long with like showing that I was perfect and I didn't need anything to be in relationship, that when I finally started to say like, I need this other thing in relationship, like I'm frustrated here, I'm not happy here, she was just like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, like we've been living this life for all of these years that has really worked for me. I haven't had to do anything. You have never said that you need anything. And now here you are all of these years later saying that you want me to be a partner. You want me to contribute here. You want me to do this. And I'm not interested in that. Like you afforded me this lifestyle and I don't want to do that. And so the responsibility that I took in my divorce is that, you know, when you don't tell a person what you need in relationship, then they're under no obligation to provide it to you. They're, you know, I had this expectation that if I was nice and I was sweet and I gave, that somehow by osmosis, she would absorb that and then reflect it. And that's not really how human beings work. Mm-hmm. You know, you give people the keys to success in relationship with you by telling them how you want to be loved, what's important to you, and giving them the opportunity to show up in that way. And they can opt out. So there was a part of me that didn't say the thing for a long time because I was like, what if she don't want to do this? What if she says no? And then that looks like rejection to me. Why don't I just keep making the relationship go on my own and just be okay?
Right.
But then that showed up as resentment. And so it was a recipe for disaster anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That resentment piece is huge because I think that's one of the dominant narratives that I hear in relationships that are not working out is like, oh, I'm so frustrated that this person's not doing this, this, and that, and not meeting my standards in this and this way, but they're not actually communicating it to that person or taking the responsibility to remove themselves from the relationship.
Right.
It's, you know, kind of a losing battle.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah,
because it's so interesting how people just are afraid to have hard conversations. Mm-hmm. Like I've thought about it more and more over the past couple of years, and like oh, I wonder if this relationship could have been salvaged if we had just had a conversation, or, you know, and it's just so surprising how many people will choose avoidance, or I don't know what the other things are or why we don't, but there's something to be said about, you know, adults not being able to just confront things head on and speak about them without being emotionally charged. You know what I mean? Like without having to like read you and like go off and things like that. But how come I can't just express to you how I'm feeling? And we have a conversation about it. So weird.
Something that I tell my clients a lot is, because I have a lot of clients who struggle with like people pleasing and perfectionism and all the things and trying to make themselves smaller in order to be accepted and loved. And we talk about, you know, I don't want to rock the boat, but in not rocking the boat, you're guaranteeing that the ship will sink. Because eventually it's going to come out in one way or another. And then it comes out super charged, super accusatory, like not regulated at all. For either of you, like, what was your experience with learning how to communicate in a healthier way?
Oh, it's a work in progress still. Yeah. I think for me, one of the ways I used to do it before I was in therapy, so pre-therapy, I would sort of just hold on to everything that I was feeling. I'm super, like, I'm overcoming people pleasing. I'm overcoming perfectionism. Totally. I'm overcoming a lot of these things. So before, I would just hold in what I was feeling. And for me, I didn't necessarily blow up when it got too much. I would always get it out and I would like write a letter. I've had like two friendships specifically where I held the thing in, and when I put it out on paper and said, this is how I'm feeling and I have a problem with it and change or else, like, both of those friendships I don't have anymore. So like one of the friends at least responded to it and said, oh my gosh, you're right, I apologize, let's figure it out. And she didn't change her behavior, so that was that. The other friend just didn't even respond to it. And so therapy has really taught me, just first of all, like, really helped me to become aware of people pleasing and perfectionism and where the root of it is. Like, where did I learn that? What conditions in my childhood, like, sort of taught me that? And also, like, the importance of boundaries. Like, something that my therapist talks to me about consistently is, like, a boundary is the distance between you choosing yourself and you choosing the other person. And so even as recent as one of our most, like, the last two sessions, I was talking to her about, like, oh, how do I find a really, like, non-charged way to set this boundary or enforce the boundary? Like, how do I keep the peace, essentially, and set this boundary? And she was like, you could try to say it jokingly, or you can just deal with the fact that it might be a little uncomfortable and just say what you need.
Right.
And that part was like, you know, like, I don't want to do that. But to answer your question, like, how am I finding my way through it, is the God in therapy, like, just and practice. Like, I don't, sometimes I'm able to do it, I think, well, and I'm comfortable. And other times I literally have to, like, practice, like, this is process how I'm feeling. Okay, why am I feeling this way? What do I want to do about it? Practice saying it, write it down. And then literally, like, I'm coaching myself through the conversation when I'm having it. Cause it's not easy. I don't want to take that for granted. It's not always easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can sit here all day and be like, just say the thing. But when the body starts to take over and have that nervous system reaction, you're sweating and you're freaking out and you're like, oh my God, I can't do it. It's like, that's past logic at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What about you? Yeah. For me, I think I've turned into a little bit more of a thug with it. Like, I have very few F's to give about, you know, how people respond to the boundaries that I set now.
Okay.
I think that it is my responsibility to say the thing and open the door for you to meet me in relationship. So I have this thing that I always say about when I was growing up, one of the things my mom used to make us do is set the table. And so what I do a lot now is set the table for a relationship, and I'm inviting you to meet me in that space. But this is what is required to be in the space with me for us to have a healthy relationship. And I think I just am able to give people permission now to not meet me in that space and be okay with their departure if it doesn't work for them. And that was something that was really hard for me because I worried about, you know, people not wanting to be in a relationship with me. What if they don't like me? I used to be a chameleon. Like, you know, whatever you liked, I can do that. You know, whatever you enjoy, let's do that. You like to go to the movies, let's do that. You know, this is what you like to do to kick it as friends, then let's do that. And now I don't want to do that. So if I don't want to do that, I'm not going to do it. You know, if there's an opportunity for us to meet up at a place that works for both of us, or to meet in relationship in a space that works for both of us, then I'm open to that. But I think I spent, you know, 39 years of my life, like, dying to what it is that I wanted in order to be in a relationship. And I just don't want to spend any more time in my life doing that type of thing, because it is frustration that I'm giving myself. And often when I'm keeping the peace, I'm giving away my peace. Mm-hmm. And that ends up not working anyway. So mm-hmm. I can hold some resentment, and I can be mad at you, but even that is my fault if I don't say the thing and just deal with whether or not you want to show up in the space.
That's one thing I would love to add to that is I so admire the way Scott is able to just say what is on his mind. And he does it in a way that's like, sometimes it's joking, but it's like real, you know, like, you know, it's authentic and he means it. Other times it's so matter of fact. And I know it's from his like 22 years of being a mental health professional, especially in like substance abuse programs where you just gotta like hold people accountable and not, I can't take any shit. But I so admire him just using his words, and I try often like, okay, how can I say this and not be all worked up emotionally, because I come from a background where it's like just a lot of emotional charge around a lot of communication. And so me learning how to take that away so that it doesn't impact my delivery and doesn't impact the message is something that I'm learning he does really well.
Yeah, I was actually going to say something similar, because I could see the way you were looking at him when he was talking and just so much love in your eyes. And also, I find it so interesting the type of partners that we attract. And you're now in this, you're working on people pleasing and you're working on communication, and you've attracted this partner who has such direct delivery. Like, that's so, that is really an indication of what you're looking to learn to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's 1,000%. Awesome. Spot on.
What do you think your background, or tell me a little bit more about your background with coming from like emotionally charged conversations and not feeling like you knew how to have these hard conversations.
What's interesting is that I didn't have even an awareness around that until like this year.
Oh, really?
Like, I knew that I was having, I was showing up in a certain way and I wanted to show up differently. They were like, I knew pieces of it. It's starting to all come together into one fuller picture as to the root of it and the symptoms of it and how it's played out in my life is what I mean. I'm just like, the full puzzle has come together this year in a richer way. I knew that, I guess I just didn't even realize that I was people pleasing as much until maybe about a year ago in therapy and found my way, actually stole Scott's therapist. found my way to someone who was like, she just really put a mirror up to me and like was empowering me to advocate for myself and to show up for what I need and pay attention for, just really and empowering me. The language that you used earlier about like playing smaller, shrinking so that everybody else feels okay is like spot on for how I showed up in the world. And she was like, pulling me out, inviting me to show up, inviting me to be who I am, inviting me to like have my voice and for my light to shine. And so when I started testing that smallly, but even I started testing that, I noticed I was having way more friction in my relationships than I had anticipated. And I remember telling Scott, like, I feel like I'm having a lot of friction in places. I'm not used to that. That's, I like to keep the peace. And he was like, yeah, because you're different now. Like, you're different. You're showing up differently. Right. And I didn't anticipate the fallout. Yeah. So that's something else that we process together. Like, as you evolve, you become, I don't know, a more healed, you know, version of yourself. Like, what that does to the people around you, especially if they are comfortable with who you were or comfortable with where they are or don't want to meet you halfway. Yeah, hopefully I answered your question, but this is all very recent.
Yeah, that's so interesting. How long have you two been together?
About 6 years together. Wait, is that right? So 5 years together, 3 years married, something like that.
Okay, so this
it feels like a lifetime, though.
Yeah, this is a really interesting journey that you've been on. Was there a catalyst that was like, okay, I really need to start looking at this stuff? Because to go from not having awareness of it really to then all of a sudden being like, whoa, I'm people pleasing and I'm not showing up in the way that I want to be, Do you mind me asking, like, was there a thing that happened?
I had always been looking for a therapist. Like, I knew I started in my 30s starting to choose to unlearn things that I had learned as a child, things about religion that weren't, I think, in alignment with my view of spirituality, like relationship mm-hmm. with God. So I started to sort of do that work in my 30s. And then we may meet, and I want to say when we were dating, I started to find a look for a therapist. I just never found anyone I think that like resonated with me so completely. And then we got married and found a therapist immediately. So we wanted that to be a part of our maintenance. Like yeah. we didn't want to have to find a therapist whenever we were in crisis. So we found someone early on. He found her, and she invited me to like to get to know me a little bit better. And after that first session, I was like, oh. This yeah, is her. So it wasn't yeah. exactly. So it wasn't anything. Well, maybe I'll take that back. I think one of the things that actually sparked me to like really take it seriously in terms of finding someone was when we were talking about building our family and okay. started on this like fertility journey, trying to like build a mm. family and fertility treatments and things like that. That's when I was really like, okay, I should have someone to talk to about like all these life transitions I'm experiencing. I just got married. We're trying to have babies. It's a lot. So it was like life yeah. transitions that sparked all of it.
Yeah. And you start to think about, you know, the kind of generational things that you're going to carry on to your children and all of mm-hmm. that. Like what cycles do I not want to bring with me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How has it been for the both of you? I mean, I'm really curious in the influence that being Black and like being raised in a Black community had on your perception of love and your perception of mental health and self-care. I know there's a ton of stigma with getting mental health help at all.
That's a great question. You want to go for it?
I think for me, just, you know, this idea that showing up as myself really wasn't safe.
Yeah.
Just on several levels. And you know, the thing that I, you know, read once about the experience of being a Black man in America is, number one, we have to be accepted amongst ourselves, you know, with other Black men. And then there's this other hump to get over of being accepted into the community, into society.
Yeah.
Right. And the book that I read when I was younger is called Cool Poles. Mm-hmm. And it was this idea that, you know, you got to be cool to the homies first. And then you go out and you got to deal with racism and all these other things that are out in the community. And I was struggling to like find my cool. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I couldn't find my cool as like a chunky kid and that didn't play a lot of sports and didn't meet a lot of those expectations. My dad was like this big time baseball star. And I never wanted to do any of those things. So I struggled with finding acceptance there. Mm-hmm. And then having to deal with this idea of coming into like teenager adulthood and then just all of a sudden not being good enough to play sports and then suddenly being like feared as a big Black man, mm-hmm. like who would, might raise his voice, might do any of those things. And like it went from like not being enough on this side to being too much right. on this other side and struggling to find balance with that. And it was really, really difficult, you know, for me to navigate, you know, that way. And I found a way to just like be what I thought was being humble, mm-hmm. but really to just learn to not use my voice.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, I learned to not use my voice and just be cool with what everybody else wanted to do, to be accepted amongst my friends, and then not to use my voice on this other side to not scare the white people,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that was very difficult for me. And I just had to learn to find my voice on both ends of it and be okay with who I was and be okay with the fallout for how other people felt about it,
mm-hmm.
and not take that on as my responsibility.
Right.
And a lot of, you know, how I learned to show up in the world was taking that on, being responsible for how other people felt. And yeah. it wasn't even so much about just those two things. I had to learn to see the world, you know, as much bigger and then carve my own path, right. you know, in that world and be okay with, you know, however people felt about it. But
yeah.
to value the way that I felt about it most and be at peace with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. If I could add in terms of like the stigma and the Black community in general, so much, I'll speak for Scott and I's experience, because I know that this is not all of our experience in the Black community. We're not a monolith. For us, though, we grew up heavily in the church, right? So, so much of our upbringing was the Black church. And while there is so much good in that, having that experience in terms of the community that it gave you and the faith that it gave you and the resilience that it taught you and, you know, how to live your life a certain way for better good, all of that is great. There's so many messages within, I think, Christianity in general that we try to kind of... we respectfully disagree with, I think, in terms of, so like growing up, we heard a lot of prayers that would often be like, we're not worthy. We're not, we don't, you know, like that type of speech. Yeah. And that has been so counterproductive to us establishing or affirming our enoughness, like to be able to say, okay, I'm enough no matter what I do, no matter what works I do. So that's one part of it. And in that vein of the church is like, so much of our upbringing is that you pray about it, you know? And yeah. So seeing a therapist or a counselor, as so many folks call it, was, I don't know that it was necessarily taboo. It was just like not the norm. That's right. Not what you do, right? Unless, I don't know, you needed something prescribed. I don't think I ever remember someone saying that you're crazy, but right. It was just like frowned upon. If you had an issue, we're going to figure out how to pray it away. We're going to figure out how to fast it away. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so... we're so grateful to now be in a church home and community where the pastor himself is like God in therapy. Make sure you have a therapist.
Okay,
so a lot of that is being undone by, I think, younger generations, but like our parents, aunties, uncles, grandparents, you know what I mean? Not so much other things. We're like, we're disruptors. We're pushing the envelope. We're going to acupuncture and, you know, trying to eat differently and saying what's on our mind. And we're trying not to keep secrets and, you know, just all of those types of things. We're trying to just show up differently and show, I think, just by our lives that different is possible and different is okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, all of that takes definitely a good amount of courage and sometimes thick skin and you know, it's just different than how we were raised.
Yeah. Because you have a whole platform online talking about these things that may have been, or are still taboo. Like that is, you're definitely a disruptor. You're not wrong about that. What's the, do you get, you know, interesting reactions from people in your families or like people you haven't seen in a while?
Oh, I absolutely do. I'm going to get a call probably once every 2 weeks from my mom. Like, I saw the podcast, like, what do you mean? Me and your daddy didn't take care of you, or we created this trauma for you. Weren't you taken care of? What do you mean by that?
And you're like, just don't listen.
And it is like, right. And well, my mom won't even listen to the whole thing. She'll hear like we do like these 1 minute or a minute and a half blurbs where, you know, there's like a key point in there, and she'll hear that and be like, well, I don't understand. And I'll be like, mom, it's okay. You know, we all have traumas. We all have stuck places. Shatea and I will have our own things that we pass along to our children that won't meet them where they are and will end up being some type of stuck place for them. And our prayer will be that they will have the foresight to get into some therapy and, you know, talk through it so it doesn't become something that hinders their growth, you know. And I can remember growing up, one of the things that kept us, you know, out of touch with mental health, like we would have family members and stuff that, you know, had a mental illness. We didn't know what it was, but we knew we had Uncle Jake or whoever that was in the back room that never came out. You know, and I knew that he got a check. And that my mom like distributed his money, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I never knew the background of all that stuff. I never knew what was really going on. And I can remember like when I first started dealing with my traumas and all that kind of stuff and talking to my dad about some stuck points that he and I had around like manhood. Like I would see him tell me to be this kind of man, but then he was this kind of man. And I was trying to reconcile those. Like, boy, I paid for that damn degree. Don't talk to me about, you know, trying to be better. Like you ate. You were fed.
Oh,
I loved you as best I could. Don't talk to me about what I did wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of those things just kind of like, they were a slap in the face to what I was trying to do with like exposing my people to mental health.
Yeah.
And once you get healing, you just really want it for everybody.
Yeah.
You're like, this would make our relationship so much better. And my mother and father were like, no, thank you.
The other thing that I definitely don't want us to leave out is the fact that we talk about this often too. We, to be able to be in this space to talk about going to therapy and acupuncture and eating well is a privilege. Totally. So definitely a privileged point of view, even in relation to our parents and to other people. We are living completely different than our parents did. They had a whole different, they were in survival mode for most of their lives. Knowing our parents' story and how they worked them their way up from like poverty to middle class, and the world was very different. Racism was very different. The systems were very different. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, we've come a long way, but the systems that they had to survive in are very different than the ones that we do. And so here we are like, oh my gosh, this newfound revelation is amazing. And they're like, you know what I mean? That's just not the life that they've had to live. So I don't want to discount. I think we always say this too. Our parents did the best that they could with the information that they had and who they were. Absolutely. Right. So grateful to them. We honor them. And you know, when you love people, you just want better for them too. And sometimes it's probably not the right time.
That's the message that I try to give to my mom, even when she has negative pushback. Yeah. It is just kind of like understanding that even some of the ways that she shows up now, we grew up in the Jim Crow South. Yeah, so, you know, her attitude about her child is always one of protection.
Yeah.
So she never wanted me to take a lot of risks. She didn't want me to leave Alabama and move to Atlanta because there's so much trafficking. You know, there's so much racism and there's so much this, and be scared and kind of shrink back. And it kind of like, you know, reinforced some of those things that I was really trying to break out of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like to this day, my mom, if she's coming to Atlanta, I have to meet her like 20 miles outside of the city limit because she still is afraid.
Yeah.
And she's just let that fear hold her. And I understand that that's a part of who she is. And she has her own work to do around that. And she may or may not ever do that work, but I'm going to meet her where she is. But I'm always going to encourage her to like, find your bravery, find your voice. Like, you're okay. We'll guide you in. You know, but we can do something different to make our lives better. And, you know, just like with anybody else, it's their decision about whether or not they want to do that work.
Yeah. Yeah. We're on the same wavelength, because I was just about to bring up the survival mode thing. And something that I talk about a lot is there's this line when we're talking about personal development of it gets stickier or tricky or whatever when you get to things that are actually really about survival. You know, being Black in America, or being Black in the Jim Crow South, you know, and money issues, that's another big one, right? Like when it really, there is an element of survival versus just fear that feels like survival. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate that on your own journeys or when talking to people?
No, that's a good question. I don't even know if I've thought about it. Well, I think in our conversations, another essence is trying to affirm and empower our well-being, is the best way to put it. I know that circumstances that should not be taken lightly sort of dictate where everyone is. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that what our mindset and our choices have so much to do with how our lives are right now. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I personally try to approach it is like addressing what we think and what we say about our lives, and like try to reframe and affirm what's possible for our lives. So again, there are some very real circumstances. There are still some very real systems that especially our community are faced with. And there are also like opportunities for us to change our lives, I think, in really beautiful ways, if we believe that it's possible and if we choose to. And that could feel very woo-woo to a lot of people, but it's also pretty like proven, right? Isn't there like data around that kind of stuff? And so I really believe in that, even so much where I'm telling him like, we can't say this. We can only affirm our abundance. We can only, you know what I mean? Like we need to speak a certain way about our lives. We need to believe a certain thing about our lives. And so, you know, it's really speaks towards thriving and not just surviving. We just try to model that and encourage that for others, I think.
Yeah. It really is difficult work to get out of a scarcity mindset, not just with finances, but with our emotional well-being, with the ability that we have to really take control, you know, of our lives. And it is, you know, I think we've been so used to like being a victim of circumstance that it's difficult to step out and like have this level of faith or have this level of belief in yourself that would cause you to take a step that you may otherwise be very scared of. Because of like that scarcity mindset, because of like, what if I step out and I take this new job and it doesn't work out and I get fired, then what will I fall back on? You know, what if I have this conversation and then the person doesn't want to be in a relationship with me and then I'm lonely and nobody ever talks to me again and the word gets around that I'm a bad friend? Like it is all it always comes back to scarcity. Like it is fear. It is like, I don't trust myself and what will I have to fall back on, and really like making the choice to do the thing. One of the things that we always hashtag and say is like, just got to do it scared. Like it's okay to be afraid, right? That's natural. That is the body and the mind really trying to protect you from harm, but it's okay. Like you'll be okay. You've always been okay. You've always been enough. You just got to do it scared.
This is so timely because I was in the middle of writing a post today about that a lot of people replace the words I'm afraid with I can't and don't monitor that language. So it's like, well, I can't do this, I can't do that. And it's no, you're just scared to do that thing, which is totally fine. But I'm not going to affirm that you can't.
That's good.
Because who does that help?
No one.
No
That's
one.
That's good, Whitney.
Same page. I love it.
It really makes me think of the name of your podcast, right? And it's all made up anyway.
Who decided?
So it is really about like the stories that we tell ourselves about our ability, you know, to move forward, to make a choice, to have faith, to take the leap, all of those things, right? If we consistently tell ourselves these stories that we can't, that it won't be successful, then we end up, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because we actually never take the step. We actually never do the thing. I was reading something the other day that said that some statistic around the fact like people who are loyal to their jobs end up making on average about 30% less than people who change jobs every 2 to 3 years. And it is because an employer is never gonna promote you and pay you when they know that you're satisfied with doing what you're doing or that you're too scared to leave. And that is just evidence that you can't be afraid to move around. And Shatay's been talking to me probably about a year and a half about leaving my job and going into private practice and doing all these other things. And I'm like, look, you got me doing this podcast now, and I'm doing some other things. Like, that's about as brave as I'm going to get for right now. But, you know, it is the story that I'm telling myself about. I'm battling, like, manhood. You know, what if I'm not able to provide for my family? What if I don't get enough clients? What if I'm – and then I'm just, like, there's no good man that's mooching off this lady that makes more money than me. But that is the story that I'm telling myself, right, that I won't be successful. And as long as I tell myself that story, then I'll stay stuck. And often we keep ourselves stuck in that way.
Since he brought it up, so I try not to bring this up anymore because he says it feels like pressure. But since he brought it up, do you know the amount of people asking for him to...
I was gonna say the same thing. I was like, I don't think you're gonna have an issue personally, but I understand the fear. I mean, I've been in my own practice or business for 5 years and I still have that a lot where it's like, well, what if I run out of money or what if I run out of clients or whatever, you know, buyer behavior has changed. There's so many stories that it gets scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was good. Y'all are preaching. That's good.
But I will say, your message is spot on. And I think you would have no issue with, you know, getting clients and having a private practice. And I also understand that when someone tells me to do something, I want to do the exact opposite. So
I'm so anti-authority.
I mean, I think you, let me take that back. I was going to say, I think to be in mental health and to be talking about these things, there's a part of you that has to be anti-authority. I don't think that's actually true with a lot of therapists because you can just like go through the system and do all the things that the therapist, you know, whatever. But I think there's a good sector of people that like when you're in this psychology field and you're interested in psychology and personal development, you eventually get into like why am I believing the things that I believe? Why am I, who taught me this stuff? Like, what is this? And like rejecting it because you have to.
Yeah. And a part of it for me, I think, is I go back and forth between like the veterans that I serve now, like who's going to do that work if I'm not there? And then there's the other side of it where I'm like, most of my frustration with my job is that I am in a system that at the core of my being, I should be dismantling. Right. And when you are a social worker therapist, most of the systems that we exist in are things that we should be tearing down anyway. It's supposed to be someone with a picket sign outside of my job right now, rather than working within the system and trying to change it from the inside.
Sir, like the practice, the field of social work is not going to die because you choose to do it differently. Like there are still people graduating from social work programs and that will need those jobs as well. So actually you're creating space.
I can say how
you're
to make sense. Jobs. Just saying. Story I'm telling myself.
That's it. Always how it goes with stories, though. It's like, I didn't say that it was rational. It's just a thing that's my brain is telling me.
Yeah. My brain.
Well, and it's funny too, because I think a lot of mental health professionals feel that same way of like wanting to change it from the inside out and having that story of if I'm not, because I know I'm good. So if I'm not in this system doing it this way, helping these people, then who's going to? And that in itself has a lot of scarcity wrapped in it. And also like a lot of martyrdom wrapped in it, because how much service are you doing if like you're also super resentful or super frustrated about it?
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
that's good.
It's tough. I mean, I know a ton of people who have gone from being licensed therapists to then giving up their licensure and becoming coaches because they're able to practice in the way that they want to. And it's a really tricky thing to do. It comes with a lot of grief for some of my friends because there's an element of like being rejected from your community and walking away from your community, even though the community is like a board of therapists who, you know, old white men who are like making rules about shit that doesn't matter. Did you worry about that? That was the other thing, because I was, you know, in terms of the conversation of survival with money, and you know, the other one is being rejected by your community. That's one that comes up a lot, especially around the church and like going against some of the church's teachings. How did you both navigate that as you started to develop your own understanding of your spirituality?
That's a good question. I personally choose when to talk about it and when not to.
Yeah.
So in the context of our podcast, I'm sharing my lived experience. And so my experience is my experience. My beliefs are my beliefs. My opinions are my opinions. They're my own. So, and I have the freedom to express them. But just like holding a dream close, because you might not trust everyone around you with that, I don't always share what I actually believe, because it could cause more conflict than not, especially within the Black community. There are some times when there are signals when I think it feels safe to talk about it. Like if I notice someone's using similar language to what I believe, and not that it's like a vast departure. So don't get me wrong. Like I'm not like rejecting, you know, how I was raised, but I've basically taken the chicken and spit out the bone in a way that like works for my life. And so I'm just kind of protective about what kind of conversations I entertain about it.
I'm just a bit more disruptive as it relates to like my personal belief system. I believe that everybody's entitled to believe whatever it is that they believe and invest mentally, emotionally, financially, whatever, in what it is that you believe. What you can't do to me and what I won't do to you is force my beliefs down your throat. Right? If we can find a way to exist in this space together, have some conversation without either of those things happening, then we're fine. And so what I believe is what I believe. And I have chosen for myself that I value relationship over religion. And I am navigating my way to relationship with my higher power that works for me and for my household. And if anybody else believes anything outside of that, if they're strict religion or agnostic or you're atheist or whatever it is, be that. But I'm not interested in you telling me about how God hasn't shown up for me I'm not interested in having those conversations. I don't entertain them.
Yeah.
It's the quickest way to be disconnected for me is trying to make me be somewhere that you aren't. But I also give my clients that same permission. Like, so I work in a treatment facility. The treatment is here. If you would like to come get the treatment, be healed, get what it is that you need, you're welcome to. I'm not going to work harder for it than you do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to force it on you.
Yeah.
You have been in the military. You've earned a 45-day stay here, a 90-day stay here. What you choose to do with that 90 days is your business.
Yeah.
If you would like to partner in treatment and be better, then I welcome it. You know, I'm setting the table for that. Yep. If you don't want to, that's fine too. Day 91, we'll holla.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my comment was more around the, like, the family piece of it. Mm-hmm. And so, and this is, now that I process it, probably more about people pleasing and keeping the peace than anything, because I feel like with family, especially if they all identify a certain way or have a certain set of beliefs, choosing something different can almost feel like a rejection of who they are.
Yeah.
And this is me knowing how some family members can show up. And so in those spaces, I just choose peace. Like, I'm just not going to engage in that kind of dialogue. I mean, it doesn't even really come up much anyways, but I think that's really it. Like, maintaining the peace so that people don't feel like, you know, if I believe differently, then I'm somehow rejecting, you know, your life.
Yeah. Which again is like such a conversation around nervous system regulation and doing that healing to take a conversation that could be about, you know, differing beliefs or shared beliefs or what have you, and making it mean that you're rejecting me or that you, you know, don't like something about me or whatever it is. Even the conversation of like how our parents' upbringing influence us, it's like, I'm not trying to blame you or put that on you. I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I'm speaking about it relatively neutrally, but if you haven't done that regulation work to understand and like to get rid of that shame, it's going to rear up and start screaming.
Spot on. That is like literally the exact description of the situation that I'm thinking about.
And so in some instances, you know, I almost feel like I'm overcorrecting for the things that I haven't been. So Shatay is like a smooth R&B song that makes you want to change. And I'm like more of a nuck if you buck kind of, like, I'm about to give it to you. And we doing it no way except this way right here. But so I have to find balance at times too.
Yeah.
But I'm just more willing to be like, if that's what we doing, then that's what we doing.
Yeah. That was a nice compliment. Thanks, love.
Yeah, sweet. That was very, I like felt that compliment.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and it sounds like you both are really learning a lot from each other and, you know, meeting each other in ways that alone you might not have gotten that in your face exposure to someone who's a little bit different from you or goes about things a little bit different.
1,000%. It's interesting how we're so, there are so many ways that we're alike, like to the point where he's like saying my very thought at the same time I'm thinking it. And then so many ways where we're like, that is not exactly how I was raised or how I see the world. And I would say being married has been the mirror to my existence that I did not know it would be. You know, you think about like, ooh, I'm going to have a partner and I'm going to do life with somebody, but you never really realize, or at least I didn't realize what that meant and like how I would be triggered and how it would bring up my stuff. And yeah, like thank God for therapy, like for real. Like there are times in therapy where she's like, oh, y'all are triggering each other. Just like it's very interesting.
Yeah, because it's such a like, I've used the word triggered like 4 times. Apparently that's my word today, but it is so interesting because when you're triggered, logic goes out the window. Like your brain literally cannot access the centers that are logical. So you're just in it.
Yes.
And it does sometimes take that outside person to be like,
yeah.
Sounds like a childhood wound. Want to talk about it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what do you think that you would want, you know, on this, in this conversation of like everything being made up and we really get to form our own path and use our life for our own growth, what is one of the things that you would love for people to walk away with, or, you know, a message that you share a lot online, or something that's really speaking to you right now?
I know immediately, and then you can go. The thing that we say after every single episode is like, life will life. Like, life is gonna life.
Yeah.
It will always present you with a haze. But the thing that we try to drive home is that you're not alone. Like, the things that we go through try to keep us, well, not try to, when you don't share them, when you don't work through them, they keep you in shame, which keeps you isolated, which keeps you at this kind of lower level of existing. And we're like, just say it, say, mm-hmm. like, face what you're feeling, understand it, process it, say out loud what you need, get the support that you need, be in community with other people. So it's just like, life doesn't have to win. Like, you can win, and you don't have to win alone. Like, you have people with you that will help you do that.
Yeah.
For me, it is this idea that life is just a journey, right? Yeah. And there will be ebbs and flows. There will be ups and downs. We'll feel like a roller coaster sometimes, but we have to give ourselves permission to, like, be on the journey, to err and correct,
yeah,
right? Uh-huh. To get it wrong sometimes, to get it right sometimes, and to then be conduits for those people who come behind us, right? To be bridge builders.
Yeah.
And so if I go through this thing and I find a way to navigate a path that could be the roadmap for another person, and I don't create the roadmap, and I watch, you know, someone who's coming after me, whether it's my children or a friend's children or up here, if I see you fall in the way that I fell, and I just allow the shame to have not told you what happened so that you can navigate a little bit better, or at least have the choice to, then mm-hmm. I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. I haven't completed my divine assignment. Mm-hmm. Right. And I believe that we're called to be in community for that reason, to help people, to help each other, to make it through this thing called life. Right. Yeah. And when people are able to accept that you won't always get it right, but you're not gonna always get it wrong either, but also we're here to support each other. And there will be some things that you are much better at than I am, and there'll be some things that I'm much better at that you are. And when we join together in a community, we kind of give each other permission to, like, give me your expertise, I'll give you mine, and we can find a way to make it through this thing and, you know, really thrive rather than survive and just be getting through another day and being depressed and like, I don't know. There's somebody that does know, mm-hmm, right? Totally. And also, you're going to figure it out too. And you mm-hmm. may end up carving a path that's different from mine, but if I can help you at least not fail, then I've done my part until you can find your own way.
Mm. Yeah, I really like that. And I think the pandemic too was really tough for people because it was like so isolating. And so to continue to push this message of community and to go out of your way to not isolate, but to share with people is so important, because that's, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that is one of the biggest reasons why our mental health was struggling so much, is that we weren't in community as much anymore. And even just being online, it promotes staying in your house all day and doing that. And it's like, that's not how we are supposed to be living.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At all. That's amazing. I have loved talking to both of you. I realized there were other things that we didn't even talk about, but I love the direction that this conversation went in. Tell me a little bit about where people can find you. I know your podcast is The Love Haze. Anything else going on you want to share?
Yeah, I think that you folks can check us out at thelovehaze.co, and that's Haze, H-A-Z-E, not our mm-hmm. last name. And also social media on IG and Facebook, we're at The Love Haze. When I think either of those locations, you can find like some resources for having difficult conversations, which, you know, because we've had so many conversations, we've got some resources and tips. And then once you sign up to get that resource, there are tons of, well, maybe not tons, there are a couple others that we send your way as well. So it's all about doing life together and getting the support that you need.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It was great talking to you too.
Thanks.
Yeah, Whitney. Thanks for having us.
If you've been enjoying the podcast and you want to support me, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. That helps me out so that more people can see the podcast, or share it with your friends, post about it online, whatever you feel inspired to do. And again, if you would like to explore the option of one-on-one coaching, see if it's going to be a good fit for you. If you've been thinking about it, you're like, I don't know, but you know deep down that you want to do it, WhitneyCatalano.com/link in bio, or just DM me on Instagram at Whitney Catalano. We could talk about it. Absolutely no pressure. This is for you and your transformation and you being able to live the life that you want to live. And I am here to support you to that process. And as Scott would say, invite you to the table if you so choose to go on that journey with me.